no doesn't mean anything about the thing you're saying no to. It means everything about how you think about yourself and how you think about the thing. So of everything, it's changed my perspective on what no means.
You are listening to the Creative Pivot Podcast, and I am your host, Heather Johnston, a coach and business mentor who is passionate about working with women in midlife who are tired of feeling stuck and unfulfilled in a life that they were told is what you're supposed to do. Making a creative pivot is about leaving those old stories in the past, tapping into your creative spirit, and writing your next chapter so that you can confidently own, this is who I am, this is what I love to do, and this is how I'm choosing to live my life. On the podcast, we talk about taking inspired action towards changing careers and starting businesses in the middle of our lives. Join me as I talk to women who decided to pivot their lives after 40, including my friend and fellow entrepreneur, Christina Brummer, founder of The Spectacular Middle, who will be joining me for a special series about starting and growing your heart-centered business. Thank you for listening, and if you are ready to make your own creative pivot, visit thecreativepivot.com. And now, here is our latest episode. Today on this episode of The Creative Pivot, I am interviewing Coach Sheila Morgan. Sheila, I'm so glad to have you here and to talk about your story and how you became a coach and what your path looked like in your own creative pivot. Why don't you start off by doing just a quick introduction of who you are and what you do through your coaching practice?
Yes. So I am a life and relationship coach. I am married to my third husband, so I know what I'm doing. And we have an amazing relationship, and through learning how to have that great relationship, I became a coach. So that's a much longer story. Maybe we can get into that, but that's where I am now. I used to work in the timber industry, did that for 30 years, a short stint in construction, a short stint in Chicago as a tour guide, and then came back to the timber and logging and working in a sawmill and moving on into life coaching, which is like, does not seem like a, like your typical transition, right? But here I am and loving it. Absolutely loving it. We have together, my husband and I have 7 kids. Most of them are grown up, and we have a ton of little grandkids running around too.
Your life is full in many, many different ways. You know, I always like to go back to kind of the earlier days. You always kind of had this piece in you to kind of teach and guide and help others. Where did that first spark seem to be apparent to you?
Check with my cousins. They'll tell you I used to sit them down when they were little and we'd play school. And I got to be the teacher and I'd give them homework and I would make them do whatever. They had to read something, they had to do math, they had to write, all the things. I just had this desire to teach and help people. And I don't know if it came from my own desire to always feeling like I needed to like fix and be better. I know that that was kind of a thing as a little kid, like always feeling like, oh, I'm doing something wrong. I'm doing things wrong and feeling bad. And there was something wrong with me. So always trying to fix and grow myself. And it reflected onto other people. If I saw, oh, they are doing something they shouldn't be, or they're unhappy. You know, anytime someone was unhappy, I wanted to fix it. Anytime somebody struggled, I wanted to fix it. Just from a little kid, and I was a teacher's aide when I was in high school. I'd go to the elementary school and help the kids there. I was a camp counselor for outdoor school. Like little sixth graders would go to outdoor school. I'd be the camp counselor. Just everything that I did, everything I participated in, I always found myself being a mentor or a teacher or the helper, always doing all of that. And I don't know if it all came from a place of people pleasing or what, but I know there was an element of trying to fix, trying to be better, trying to help other people be better. And it didn't seem to matter what job I had. I was always the person that would go and help people. People would come to me for advice. People would come to me or a shoulder to cry on. And it just was always there. It just seems like it was always there. And I had a belief that I wasn't someone that could do that formally, like go to school to become a psychologist or become a social worker or become a teacher, which was what I really wanted to do. I always felt like, no, I can't do that. I don't have it in me to be that kind of person, to do that kind of thing. So I just kind of followed what was kind of the easy path for me out of high school. I just got a job. I got married right away. I was pregnant when I got out of high school. So that was like the obvious, oh, get married and do all of that. That didn't last. Then I got married again, and we were together for 14 years. We had kids together, all of that. And then even in the job that I had then, I worked as a secretary in the timber industry. I worked in even the construction job I had. I became the apprentice that was in charge of other apprentices. I was always the responsible one, always the helper, always taking care of things. And it just continued. And I always had this feeling where I was always pushing and trying to find the job that would put me in a position where I could really help people. I would settle for these jobs, but then I would have like these side jobs, either like creating a business, or I'd volunteer to help new hires, or I would teach classes or teach people how to drive a forklift or use a chainsaw or safety orientations. I'd volunteer for all the cool projects. It didn't matter what job I had. I was always finding something that I could do that was helpful.
I think that your story resonates so many of us, because as I'm hearing you talk, I think about the same thing, that I always was drawn to how can I be of service? How can I be helpful? It always made me feel good. But at the same time, I was always told that I was the quiet one, that I didn't stand up for myself, mm-hmm. that I had too many questions about things. And so because of that, I thought, oh, well, then I wouldn't be good in an official kind of guide role or teacher role, or where, you know, as a leader or even as a manager. And so I just, you know, for a very long time, pushed back. Even when those opportunities were like right in front of me, I was the one standing in my own way.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm interested to hear how coaching, your introduction to coaching, how that really helped you. What a powerful tool I think it is for the people that you work with. Mm-hmm. When did you first hear kind of that idea of life coaching? Or were you already doing it and then you realize, oh, it's called something?
I think I was probably doing it, but I was giving advice. I wasn't really coaching,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Previous mm-hmm. to that. And when I got divorced the second time, I went through a really rough, I was a partier after that. It was hard. It was a bad divorce. It was ugly. And so again, I was in that space of how do I fix myself? How do I stop being broken? How can I be a better person, live my life? How can I be more fulfilled? Like all of the questions were happening all the time. I drank way too much. You know, I stayed out too late, lots of risky behavior. It wasn't a good time for me. And I slowly started coming out of that, and I was reading. I was wanting to create a business. I was dating different people. When I had a really bad breakup, I put it on Facebook that I needed to get away. I needed a road trip. And so people reached out like, oh, come visit me. I had cousins in Alabama and I had family in Iowa. And so I reconnected with someone I'd gone to high school with, and they created a trip for me. And basically he worked for the airlines and a major airline, and he flew me to all these different places, and we ended up, it became like a 3-year long relationship, me and him. And that's how come I moved to Chicago. I lived there with him for a year. And while I was there, I had this year of not having to work. I was on unemployment because I moved to be with a partner, and I started looking at, like, I've always wanted to do a business. This would be a great opportunity for me to create a business. And, but while I was there, everything I thought of, I just was too scared to try. And so when I moved back to Oregon, I went to some different job. I got called back by the company that I'd worked for when I left for Chicago. They said, "Oh, you're back. Come back to us." So I did. I went back to them because it was great pay. But I still had that, I want to create something. I want to do something. So I started a business. I started doing paint parties where you come and you paint a painting, you have a glass of wine. They were doing it in Chicago at the time. They weren't doing it here. And so every time I tried to do a party, people were like, "What the hell are you talking about? We don't even know what that is." So I was struggling to create the business. And I discovered this woman in Australia who, she had a group called Mind Money Mojo. And it was all about helping women get past their money blocks, their whatever blocks they had around creating a business or doing something for themselves. So I joined her group. And that's basically where I learned about coaching. Was she was a coach. She was like a business coach. She was a mindset coach. I learned about the EFT tapping technique from her. I learned about visualization and meditation and all of those kinds of things. And I thought, wow, this is cool. I really like this. And so my paint parties even kind of became an opportunity for people to let go of some of their fear of mistake. And we would talk about kind of like the Bob Ross thing with like, "Oh, it's not a mistake. It's a happy accident. You know, it's a happy little tree that you just made accidentally over here. So let's put a mountain underneath it, you know?" So things like that. And, "Oh, my bird's in the wrong spot. That's okay. We're going to put some more birds over here." Or teaching people that that's how life is too. It's like, you don't have to think of the things that you've done in your past as this terrible mistake. You can think of it as a learning opportunity, or you can think of it as whatever, however you want to think of it that works for you. And I thought, "Wow, I'm kind of doing this coaching thing during these paint parties." So I thought, "Well, I'm going to go to school for this. You can get certified." So I signed up with a coaching program that was in Australia. So it was going to all be online. There was this funky thing called video conference calls that people were too sure on back then.
This strange new concept.
Yeah. So we would do it. We were going to do these calls. And so I signed up, paid the money. And then it was like 6 months out before it even started, because there was such a long waiting list. And the closer it got, the more I freaked out. And then finally I said, "Who am I? You know, I'm a mess. I can't teach other women how to have a great life. My life is crap. I can't do this." So with that kind of mindset, obviously I'm not going to be able to do it. So I got my money back from them. And so I had this money and sitting in my account and kind of beating myself up that I can't even do this kind of a thing. And I had an opportunity to go to a leadership training. So I participated in that and did kind of push me to get past a lot of things. And then in 2018, I finally went through a coach training and I graduated in early 2019 with that. So I did it. I created that. And I had my first paid coaching clients. And then in 2019, I quit my job at the lumber mill. By then I had become a supervisor. I'd moved up from pushing a broom to being a boss. And I left there in 2019 and tried to build my business. Coaching school that I wanted to go to, I decided to sign up with them in 2020. So I went there March of 2020, which was like, if you're going to be anywhere during a global pandemic, I highly recommend being in a group with a ton of coaches.
I went through a similar thing. So I totally agree. It's like, wow, I feel like I made it through in a totally different way than other
Yes,
people.
I thrived in 2020. I thrived. I lost weight. I felt really great. I had all these new friends. It was amazing. I was everyone was like, I felt so bad because everyone was miserable and going through so much. But I'm like, oh no, bring on the Zoom meetings. I'm here for it. You know, like everybody, I don't have to convince clients to get on a Zoom call anymore. Everybody's just assuming that's what we're doing. It made my life so much easier. And then 2021 was a little bit harder for me, but I feel like all of that is helping me learn to create my business and all of these things that I'm going through. So now what year are we? I'm losing track of the year.
2022.
Yeah. And
feels like 2032, but yes.
Yeah, it's like when I tell my husband, if I say last year, I mean 2019. It's like, that's just all the years in between didn't happen. So, but yeah, I learned about coaching because I was trying to create a business. And I feel like that's where a lot of people discover it, is they feel like there's something that they want to do. And they're just like, they reach out to somebody somewhere, like, help me, like, show me how to do this. And a lot of the coaches that I talk to, that's how they got into coaching. Like, it worked for me. I love it. It's my chance to really help other people thrive. So bring it on. Like, I want to learn all the stuff. And then you sign up for all the programs, you do all the things. And like, I'm living in this whole world of coaches now. And I just love it. So great.
Well, it's also a community, at least that I find, that if you meet people, especially through like a coaching program where you're going through and you're being trained and you're doing these, you know, these sessions with each other and finding clients, it is so supportive.
Yeah.
And that's what I encourage, I think, for any woman that just wants to build a business, is do not do it on your own. Yeah. Like, try to find a community of some sort that can give you ideas and that can help you, and find a coach. I highly recommend finding a coach, because there's so much mindset kind of changing and work that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. I've been liking to ask this question recently of people, is what would the 20-year-old you think about you now? What would most surprise 20-year-old Sheila?
Wow, that's a great one. I think probably that I bought a house. I always thought of that as a way of being locked down, and that I wouldn't be able to travel the world or do amazing things or have a great life if I bought a house. I don't know where I got that idea. That I actually enjoy keeping my house nice. You know, we're going through a remodel right now, and it's a lot of work, but it's, when I walk into my living room now, it's like, oh, I love this. It's so nice. I used to just hate the idea of a picket fence and, you know, 2.5 kids and all of that. But now that I have my house and making it, my husband calls it our sanctuary, and I love that word, you know, having kind of our place to relax and feel safe. I guess that's what a sanctuary is for, right? So yeah, I think I'd be surprised about that. I think I'd be surprised that what was I doing at 20? I had a child at 20. I was not really between marriages. I was separated from my first husband, and I was just meeting my second. So probably being married three times might be a surprise. Living in the town that I'm living in. I think I thought I would live in my hometown forever, which I'm only about 20 miles from my hometown, so I didn't go that far. Having lived in Chicago a year, that would have shocked the crap out of me at 20 to think that I would ever do that. I had a friend invite me to go to California and live there, and I was terrified, absolutely terrified. That I've been to Europe and traveled Germany and England and France and Ireland and all of that would shock me at 20 to think that I would have done that. That's a great question. Thanks for asking that. Like, just like, it's a great opportunity to look back and see things that I've done that I used to not believe that I could ever have accomplished.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things with getting older, and you see this over and over again, I mean, people, you know, there's all sorts of things, like your body starts changing in ways you never could picture. Your brain doesn't always remember the things. You really do give up some of that. I think your earrings say it all. If I, you know.
Yes, I love
it. You know, it's, you just don't, I mean, you still give a crap. I'll say that. You still give a crap about what people think. You can't, you know, that is a constant, but you give much less, especially around people that don't necessarily matter in your life. And it used to be all about, I think, when I was 20, what others, like petrified of what others would think of me, and then not trying things because of it. You know, that people pleasing was definitely very, very strong, you know, as a 20 something year old. Mm-hmm. So I just like to ask that question because so many people were, you know, you get out of the high school years, you get into wherever, like you have some people that are still living at home at 20, some people that have been married and having kids at 20, some people that are in the military or went right into some, you know, like lifelong career thinking that's going to be what I do for the rest of my life, you know, and then looking back, you know, it's like, oh, and I thought I knew it all. I will say that I did think I knew way more than I really, than I really
And
did.
Back then, 30 was old, right? So I figured if I didn't have my stuff together by 30, I was doomed.
Yeah, I look at pictures now of my mom at certain points, like in my life, looking back, and I was like, oh, my mom was younger than me when I graduated from high school. You know, my mom was this age. She was only 42 in this picture, you know, like, but thinking like at the time, like our parents are just old, you know, and
old. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I kind of look at myself through the eyes of my kids and know like, yes, I'm old. I am. What would you say has been the number one or two starting a business? Because you've started a few different businesses, like you've kind of changed careers a few times and went back and started a few businesses. But what is it about the coaching business that you have now? What have you really learned from kind of growing that you wish you would have maybe known a little earlier on?
I think the word no comes to mind, that it's not the end and that it's not to be feared. I was just chatting with a friend about this last night, how I would be terrified to call someone and have them be upset that I was interrupting or I was a disturbance or that I was bothering them in some way. Even if it was just called like, hey, how you doing? You know, have a conversation. So the thought of having sales calls as a coach where you are talking to someone who's interested in working with you and hearing a no when you offer, well, here's how much it costs and here's how much, you know, time it takes and here's what we're going to do, and have them say, yeah, no, nothing. That's what always stopped me in every other business that I ever had. The paint parties that I was doing, I remember setting up one where we were going to paint an American flag for the 4th of July. And I put that out there and advertised it. Nobody signed up for it. And I feel like that was like the breaking point where I'm like, I can't do this business. Nobody wants. And just those thoughts about the word no and what that meant about me and what it meant about my value, my worth, that, you know, my ideas were stupid. Nobody likes what I'm doing. Nobody wants to participate. It's like that generalization, I think might be the word, where one little incident becomes the rule for everything else in your life. And I'd been to a training where I was taught that a no is just one more step to a yes. And so I had that idea intellectually, but I hadn't really embodied it. So I didn't have the persistence and the grit to hear no after no after no after no. And so the difference between the businesses I did before and doing this coaching business is that I was working with coaches to create this business. And a lot of what I'm doing, the reason I'm still in it is because I've been building up my tolerance to no and building up how I react to no and to hearing people, like some people telling me flat out, oh, that is I can't believe you charge that. That's terrible. That what, like, who do you think you are? I mean, I've had people literally like shame me for charging anything. Like charging any money at all. Like I'm a mental health professional. I'm helping people with their mental health. Why am I charging? I should be doing that for free. You know, like those kinds of things. I wouldn't have been able to create any business if I hadn't learned to get past that. So even just having a coach at all for those businesses would have helped me. And I feel like being a coach and trying to learn this as a coach, it's like diving into the deep end when I didn't know how to swim. So it had me really stalled for a long time. And it's I feel like my tolerance is just getting stronger. My ability to hear that and not take it on as it means anything about me or my skills or anything. No, it can be no, and it can be no right now. And it can be no because I'm scared. No because I don't know if this is going to work for me. And I look back at all the times where I wanted to do or try something and I turned it down even though I really wanted it and then regretted it later when the opportunity mm-hmm. wasn't there anymore. So it no doesn't mean anything about the thing you're saying no to. It means everything about how you think about yourself and how you think about the thing. So of everything, it's changed my perspective on what no means.
I think that that is such a good lesson learned. You know, as you were saying it, it's such good advice. And I think it goes along with looking for the lessons in what at first appears bad news. It you know, so often it's, there is that when people say no, it really just might at that time mean, like you said, it's a no right now. They are not ready. They might totally understand what is involved in working with you as a coach. And they might be petrified of that idea. And there's some other additional things that they need to do to then come back around. I think of the book, Prosperous Coach. I think that's a book that's gone around about
Steve.
Yeah. And that he does talk in that book about, you know, the importance of the connections of even when someone says a no, of making sure you're still connecting with them, whether that's they're on your email list or you're just reaching out every so often, and that he has examples of really working and kind of coaching people on the sidelines for like a year, year and a half. And then all of a sudden the person comes back and invests in a way they never would have invested in coaching at the very start, because it's like, oh, that's what you do on that. Oh my gosh, what would it feel like if all of a sudden, just like how you've helped me on the sidelines became, you know, like a thing I got, and like you're really coaching me. What would that look like? How would that turn my life around?
That's funny. I actually have a new client that I've known for several years and have helped off and on over the years. They participated in my free workshops, and we actually had a consult, and they said, I can't afford this. And then recently they had something major happen in their life. And so I just reached out to say, hey, I just want you to know I'm thinking about you. And I know this is really tough right now. If you need to talk, I'm here to talk. And they said, yeah, let's talk. So we had a conversation. And then at the end of the call, they said, okay, so I just want you to know I want to hire you. I've saved up my money and I want to hire you. So let's do it. And they hired me for 6 months. I was blown away. Like, I wasn't even thinking of it as a consult. It was, we were having a conversation. It's someone I care about. And you never know. You never know. And so that no could literally be not right now. I'm not ready. And like you said, just keeping in touch, keeping somebody on your email and continuing to, I think of it as like getting them to the level where they are ready to do that. You know, like doing the pre-work and help giving them pieces to believe that it's possible for them, because it can be really hard to get on a Zoom call with someone you don't really know and share things with them. And you can be afraid that it's kind of like therapy where you're going to have to give all your dirty information and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's coaching is so different from therapy. Yeah. So I just love, I think that's now my new favorite story, to just like, okay, that just reminds me that even if they didn't ever hire me, they were getting something from just being in my sphere, and that I was helping them enough that they just kept going and that they saved money up. That's huge. And as a coach, it just warms my heart, and it shows me how much need is out there for people, that it's like the gap between therapy and there's not even a gap. I was like, there's therapy and then people who are just wanting to level up.
Yeah.
High performers have coaches. Tony Robbins has a coach, right? Everybody has coaches. You know, look at sports. People have coaches for all of that. And coaches are not for people when they're broken, right? And I don't even like the idea of thinking that people are broken. It's, we're humans. We're humaning. We're being humans. And coaches just help us go to the next level of whatever it is we're working on, whatever goal we have, not because where we are is bad or wrong, but because we just want to be at a different spot,
yeah.
Like just for the fun of it.
I wish that more organizations had coaches within them because just having been a manager and a team lead and kind of having to almost coach, which is so somewhat awkward to coach people that also kind of report to you, because it's very difficult. They don't necessarily want to open up and share, when it's a person that also is like
different situation,
signing off on their timesheets and all of that. But I've also seen within some organizations, and I feel like this is very well-meaning, they train, maybe someone that does training or someone in HR that also is dealing with other things, to go through like a kind of simple coaching, like coaching skills for. If you don't have a neutral party in some of these situations, like the person will not necessarily feel they can really open up. There will always be a hesitancy of saying something that could get back to the wrong person, or that they don't really have the freedom. And especially if it's in HR, you can't have someone that's looking at like performance evaluations and then say, okay, let's have a coaching, but oftentimes it's related to that. And it's just, it's like detach those things. Like look at the person as a whole. Yeah. Let's support that person. Let's figure out how to help that person. And so I would love to see more organizations kind of even bring on coaches as independent contractors, as much as they'll bring on people to run trainings and retreats and those kind of things, like bring on some coaches and have that be something that's available for their staff that's not tied to like reporting back to their managers and things. Like, let's just try to make the person feel a little like, help them fall in love with what they do again. Because many of the people used to love, like they joined the organization because they loved it. And they kind of fell out of love because they felt like they weren't being seen. It's like it's a perfect relationship reboot. It's like fall back in love with what you do and the organization you work in. Because, well, why don't we, as we're kind of wrapping up our conversation about that, tell us about your podcast that you have. And also, I want to touch base a little bit on that you have been talking about for the month of October, which is Sober October. So let's start with your podcast.
Well, my podcast is called The Relationship Reboot. Ha! Yes. And it's on all your favorite, directories, whatever. I don't even know the name of what those are. Apps. And it's about... it's about the relationship with yourself is kind of my hidden agenda. It's for people who want to improve their relationships with other people. But I always tell people the relationship with yourself is the foundation. Like that's where we want to start working. We could spend all day trying to fix other people and that doesn't get us very far, So like we look at how we think about ourselves, how we talk about ourselves and how we treat ourselves. Self-talk, all the things. And it's amazing how that will change your relationship with others. Other people don't have to change what they're doing and you can have a better relationship. So we talk about that. There's a lot of brain science, how your brain works. But what I'm really excited about and I'm moving more into is the being with your emotions. And feeling and processing and allowing those, checking with your body and what your body needs and actually literally asking yourself, what do I need right now? And I'm working on creating a body scan where as you go through the body scan, you literally ask the parts of your body, what are you trying to tell me right now? What is it that you're needing right now? And I was doing that this morning. And I started at the top of my head and I realized I had like this low grade headache going on in my head. And I asked myself, what are you trying to tell me? What do you need right now? And I just reached for my water. It was just like, it was like, I didn't even think of water. It was just my hand just went there like, oh wow. Yeah. So I drank a bunch of water. Our body knows what we need and we do get stuck in our heads. So that's where the focus is going now. So rebooting your relationship with your body is a really important thing that's happening. And part of that is why I went into the sober October. I realized that drinking alcohol is not good for my body. Shocker, right? And I've done this, you know, over the years, I'll pick a month. Usually it's November. I usually have like no alcohol November, or how do I say that? No alcohol November. And I would allow myself to have a drink on Thanksgiving, and I would willpower my way through the month of November. But what I've noticed this year, and I've been working on listening to my body and what my body wants and needs, and alcohol is never one of the things my body actually wants or needs. I'm finding that what alcohol is for me is a way to distract myself from feeling negative emotions. And distracting from the negative emotions stops the pain for a little bit, but it pushes it away. And then when it comes back, when the effects of the alcohol are gone, it comes back harder. And this is what creates that spiral where you're reaching for more and more, trying to feel better. And I didn't want to go that direction. And I started even just noticing that I wasn't wanting alcohol as much because of checking in with my body and being more comfortable with the negative emotions. I'd pour a glass of wine and then I just wouldn't drink it. And that just seemed so weird. Like, why am I pouring it? Like, what's even the point of that? So I thought, well, we'll just go ahead and do the Sober October thing. And a lot of it is inspired by, I went through a training, an advanced certification on numbing and buffering, which is, numbing means you're trying to avoid feeling your emotions. And buffering is the action that you take to distract yourself from the emotions. So drinking would be a buffer, watching TV, being on Facebook, whatever, those kind of things. And part of that was to give up something for a month when I first started it. So what I gave up was being on my phone all the time and like unintentionally just picking up my phone and scrolling or doing all of that, because I had it in my mind that I couldn't give up alcohol. Like, oh, that was too hard. I didn't want to give up alcohol, but I decided I was going to go to a deeper level this month, and I decided to give up the alcohol. And it's been fascinating to see what's happening. Friends will say, oh, we need to get together. Oh, but you're not drinking, so we'll go to a coffee shop. I'm not necessarily drinking more coffee because I'm not drinking alcohol. I don't necessarily want to go. Like, we've been, yeah, we have to have a different beverage. Like, you know, I could drink water or I could drink nothing. We could meet on a park bench. We could meet anywhere you want. It's totally, it's not about the alcohol. It's about connecting with people. And it's funny that we always think we have to have something connecting us like that. So I've been meeting with people. I have my kombucha or water or whatever. And last night was date night, coincidentally. And we go to this great little martini bar. And it's just super fun. We love the people there. And a bunch of friends joined us. There were about 10 of us there. And I would say there was me. There were 4 of us that were drinking mocktails or water. And I thought, okay, right here is evidence that people always tell me, oh, well, you know, if you're drinking, you have to stay home and you can't go out and have fun with your friends. And it's, no, we had a blast. My stomach hurt from laughing. It was super fun. Actually, there were 5 of us. Wow. Yeah. Like half of the people there weren't drinking alcohol and we had a great time. We don't need alcohol to feel better. And it actually keeps us from feeling better. So if we're finding that we are wanting it, there's something we're trying to avoid.
Yeah. So, yeah. We were having that conversation that alcohol is often a crutch to just get you through, you know, and it can become your everyday normal thing you do to get through, which is when you're like, some people are like, well, I need it, you know, and we have the jokes all the time. Like it's wine o'clock and I've always had, you know, kind of this weird relationship with alcohol because my mom, when we were growing up, her father was an alcoholic and her brother had been an alcoholic. And so like drilling in on like family history, don't drink, don't. And so it was like, I always almost felt shame and guilt around having, but I knew where it came. Yeah. Like it came from this kind of trauma that she had grown, you know, grown up in, but it always was a, you know, especially back then.
Yeah.
Well, that was how you got through. It was a legitimate, okay, your life was hard. Let them have this kind of, like, that's the crutch to get through.
Yeah.
I heard someone recently
put a morality thing on it. They try to make it like you're a good person if you don't drink, you're bad if you do. And it's just a substance. It's, there's nothing good, bad, wrong, right about it. It's, you know, do you like the effects that you have, that it has on your body? Are you able to have a drink and be fine? Or, you know, you get to decide for yourself what works. Like, I'm doing sober October. Am I going to drink again after? Maybe. I don't know. We're just going to see, you know, if it seems like something I want to do or not. It's not a, oh, Sheila, you're being so good. I've heard that. You're being so good for.
Yes.
For not
oh, my God.
No, it's, I'm not. Actually, I'm kind of a bitch, you know, so I'm not being all that good. I'm
not being all that good.
It's not the alcohol that's doing that. That's just me.
I heard someone say about their own kind of journey and to stop, you know, they decided to stop drinking alcohol. And they said, the thing that I was most worried about is that we wouldn't be fun anymore. Like with her and her husband, because so much they realized, so much of them going out was around cocktail hours or a couple of pints after working, you know, outside all day or going for, you know, those kind of things. And that not having that would mean, like, how do we have fun? How do we celebrate? How do we do? And she's like, yeah, I got over that really quick. We figured out lots of ways that we still, you know, have fun.
It has nothing to do with what's in your glass. It has to do with what's in your heart, what's in your mind, and the intention that you have.
Yeah. I think removing the feeling or those emotions tied to alcohol in this, our society, and we see it, like we tell kids, don't drink, don't drink, don't drink. But yet they do, like they're drawn to this thing and then like, oh, only until you're 21. And then that's, you know, it's like these weird rules that we have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no wonder that people are kind of, when they finally can, they start binge drinking and this, you know, oh, I don't have to stress about college anymore because I could go and party on the weekend and get all of that out. You know, it's like, you just think about the things we don't teach ourselves or that we don't teach our kids, you know.
Yeah, teach our kids how to feel their emotions without making it bad or wrong to be sad or upset or angry.
Yeah.
That would do them a lot more service than keeping them away from alcohol.
Yeah, they started offering a program in my kids are not in high school now, but when they were in high school, that was a mindfulness, and it counted as a PE credit. And I was like, oh my gosh, I would have loved that in high school if I could take, and they have yoga. So you can take mindfulness and it's meditation. It's about listening to your body. And then they have a yoga class. I was like, where was this when I was in high school?
Yeah, we could play we could do jazzercise or play a dodgeball. Like, oh, obviously not dodgeball. So I'm gonna go do jazzercise.
We were offered. I had an aerobics class that I could take, and we had to like design a routine. And yeah, I would have so much rather just have done yoga and mindful meditation. Yeah. That would have probably helped me in life a little bit more.
Yep. Yeah, I'm so glad they're teaching that. That's great.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest today. I have loved sharing your story. And as always, we'll have all of your links in the notes so that people can find you. But why don't you say, like, where can they find you on Facebook and Instagram and your website?
I love it. So Instagram, I'm at sheila.d.morgan on Instagram. Facebook is sheila.d.morgan1, the number one. And then my personal Facebook, I have lots of friends on there, and most everything I post is public, so you can follow me on my personal Facebook. The podcast, the Relationship Reboot, is on iTunes and Spotify and all of those things. My website, the easy way to remember my website is shesmylifecoach.com. That's the way to find me there. And go take a look. I'm creating a group program for January on boundaries. So you want to get on my email list so that you can hear about that and get on the waiting list for that group program. It's going to be a great way to for us people pleasers to set healthy boundaries. I'm calling it build better boundaries. So it's going to be all about that.
Yeah, great way to start the year. Let's work on those kind of things as a great way to work on our self-love, talk about relationship, you know, changing our relationship with ourselves and our body. That sounds like a great way to start.
Yes. So good. Thank you, Heather. This was fun.
Thank you.